Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Wednesday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. The Lakers have a lot of big decisions to make this summer. How much should they run it back? What new stuff do they need? We'll talk about it with the great Howard Beck next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. No matter how or where you get your podcast, it's always going to be free. It's never going to be behind a paywall. And Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to see the show and hang out with over 17,000 subscribers, people who are excited to talk about the Lakers this offseason, figure out what they're going to be doing and how they're going to get from the Western Conference Finals to the actual finals and another title. I want to let everybody know that this episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/Locked On to get started. I mentioned in the open today, we are excited to talk about all of these things with the great Howard Beck. He is so good. He actually are contractually obligated to say the great before you say Howard Beck. That's how good he is.
There's an actual financial penalty for failing to mention it. And I insisted that David Locke put it in my Locked On contract. So, yes, thank you for abiding by the rules. And you are free from any financial.
It's both penalty. A small price to pay and a large price to pay at the exact same time.
It's funny because having had my own podcasts in the past and probably sometime in the future, apologies for the Brooklyn honking in the background. I will do the same thing. It's this reflexive thing. Whenever I bring on anybody who I hold in high esteem, and sometimes even just, you know, general mediocre or slightly above
sometimes
average
even
esteem,
when Andy's on the show.
It's just, you know, and I'm pleased to be joined today by the great whoever. And it could be my neighbor. Like, they just might be really good at double parking on street sweeping days, which is what I'm going through today. So, you know, but I appreciate it. Thank you. I will try to live up to the billing.
It is still a remarkable trick because it's 100% true. All right. So plenty to get into today. We want to talk about kind of where we've been with the Lakers this season. And more importantly, what might be coming in terms of the big decisions the Lakers have to make. But I think we spoke, Howard, it was either right at the beginning of the playoffs or right before the playoffs started. And, you know, nobody was quite sure exactly what we were going to get from the Lakers team that had shown plenty of promise after the trade deadline. But, you know, playoffs, different animal, hadn't seen it before. Big run all the way to the Western Conference Finals. And even with the 4-0 sweep at the hands of the Nuggets, three of those games were incredibly tight inside the final minute. So they weren't completely dominated as you might look at a sweep.
It was a very competitive sweep, if such a thing exists.
Right. Denver, definitely a better team, deserved to win and all that stuff. But the Lakers weren't so wildly outclassed as, you know, 4-0 might indicate. When you look at kind of the playoff, you add the playoffs, Howard, to what we saw from the regular season in this reconstruct team, what did you see from the Lakers in terms of the potential they have now, the potential going forward and all that stuff?
So I'll start with this, just as a basic, you know, premise for how to categorize this Lakers season. It was a success, especially when you consider where they started and where they were trending early on. I was one, as you guys, I think, know, who said, I don't care about the future. If you're the Lakers and you have LeBron James, you owe it to yourself and your franchise and to history and to LeBron James to do everything possible to win now. Screw the future. That my easy for me to be glib about, but I've always felt that way. And again, I felt that way when LeBron was in Cleveland the second run there. I felt that way about the way the Warriors have handled the last few years too, frankly. And listen, they won a championship. So they, you know, just like the Lakers won a championship with AD, so we can wave away a lot of stuff that went with that. The Warriors won a championship, so you can wave away the dual timeline thing, but that has failed too. And they should have been trading the picks that became Kuminga, Moody and Wiseman for veteran help. I thought that at the time. And I still think for the Lakers' sake, so they did save the season. They made the conference finals. the whole thing about like, oh, you shouldn't go all in unless you are guaranteed to win it. There are no guarantees. There's no guarantee of winning the championship. There's no guarantee of even making the finals. You give yourself the best possible chance. The Lakers did. Credit to Rob Pelinka and the staff for having done what they needed to do. Again, I thought they should have made moves like that back in July, August, September, October, November, December, and maybe they're not a seventh seed if they had just done this sooner. But still, they got the right pieces. They made the right move, right moves, and they made the conference finals. That's not nothing. And so the question becomes like, well, did you expend all that just to get swept? And now you're back to where do we go from here? And our last best chance is already gone. And we're now out that future pick. I don't think so. Like, I think, you know, let's not even dwell on LeBron's flirtations and passive aggressive, deliveries about possible retirement. Nobody thinks he's going to retire. That's just silly. Maybe he has foot surgery and maybe that, you know, puts a crimp in his offseason, whatever. LeBron James takes better care of his body than anybody possibly in the history of the NBA. So if we assume a healthy LeBron, granted turning 39 in December, but healthy LeBron and a healthy Anthony Davis, and if this, I know we'll talk about roster construction, but just this group as it is, a team that went, I think, 18-8 after the trades, after the trade deadline, second best record in the NBA, a team that was, fantastic defensively once they made those moves, a team that did make the conference finals, a team that, as you guys point out, it's a sweep, but, you know, those were competitive games. I kind of tend toward a sweep as a sweep. If you couldn't even pull out one of those games, that says something too. So we shouldn't get too caught up in, well, the point differential in a couple of games. No, you lost all four games. I don't think the gap is huge. And I do think that the optimist view of this is if you just start from day one with this group, which they very well might, you're right in the thick of things. I mean, I've said before, so I'm not going to stray from it now. If they had just had this roster on opening night instead of 65% of the way through the season, they're not a seventh seed. They're probably top four, top five at worst in the West. They still might have gotten smoked by the Nuggets, and we can talk about that as well. But I think they're overall, I think they're in a good place right now, with the major caveat being LeBron James is going into year 21 and turning 39 in December.
Well, I mean, as far as like where they stack up against Denver, when it comes to the whole should you run it back calculus, what changes, if anything, need to be made, there's always a chance whenever teams are doing this, not specifically the Lakers with Denver, but just period, when you're planning your roster moving forward. Denver is in a place right now where they've got a bunch of key players who fit really well together. They're all at a good timeline in terms of where they are in their career, age-wise, all that stuff. There's always a chance that the Lakers may not be in a position to make themselves dependably better than Denver.
So, and I think of this as through when we're talking about, you know, where they stack up next season, we have to expand it beyond Denver again, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Everybody's 0-0 in October. And I'm going to look at, well, where are the Suns then? Because they're certainly going to reformat their roster around Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. And I think the Suns will be much better. Like the Suns were a horribly flawed team once they made the deal. A horribly flawed team with like an incredible all-timer in Kevin Durant and a great player in Devin Booker. But I wasn't one who thought that. I think we might have discussed at some point. I didn't think they were the favorites in the West once they made the move for Durant. I thought they were among the favorites, and I thought they were fatally flawed.
I actually didn't think they were good.
Yeah, I was worried about their depth and their defense and their ability to stay healthy, and all those things became issues. And I'm not saying it makes me a genius by any stretch. It's just I think those were obvious.
I mean, you are the great Howard concerns. Back.
I mean, listen, you know, you said it at the top.
The great like, Howard not, back. You know.
I became great by stating the obvious better than other people who state the obvious.
But with style and zazz and
Nash.
It's all about presentation, fellas.
Yeah.
But the Suns will be better. I'm confident that they are going to make moves this offseason, and maybe it's going to be some extreme ones. Maybe they're flipping DeAndre Ayton. Maybe they're trading Chris Paul. But they're going to be a factor next season. The Clippers, I know, we laugh because they're never healthy. But you know what? The Lakers are never healthy either. So both of these teams are built on tandems that you just every year you've got to go, well, you know, if they're healthy, if Kawhi and Paul George are healthy, and maybe they're bringing back Westbrook on a bargain deal, who knows? the Clippers will be a factor again. I'm confident in that. I'm confident the Warriors are going to be a factor again. So you've got Warriors, Clippers, Suns, Nuggets, at a minimum, as teams you have to contend with. We'll just throw the Grizzlies off to the side for the moment. I don't know what the hell the Grizzlies will be next season, given all they've gone through. And I don't know what to make of the Kings having had their...
They'll be worried.
The Grizzlies? Yeah. Fretting. There'll be a lot of fretting.
Very, very worried. Very anxious.
Yeah. And then, you know, look, the Kings had a breakthrough season, and I don't mean to overlook them, but they don't have the star power of these other teams that we're talking about. And there's a good chance that in a normal season with these other teams presumably being better than they, you know, and you know, they all have had dramatic changes, that the Kings will fall back a little bit. Unless the Kings make some major changes, who knows? But anyway, throw the Kings in there too, if we want to. That's five other teams that the Lakers are contending with for supremacy at the top of the Western Conference. Any combination of which you will have to go through in the playoffs a year from now. It's going to be tough, but if it comes down to the usual NBA, you know, metrics, which is, do you have the best player in the series or the two best players in the series? Is your superstar tandem better than the other team's superstar tandem? Like, LeBron and Anthony Davis healthy is still about as great as it comes. It's just that every year you get a little less of LeBron and a little less reliability of the two of them in terms of their health. And so I think where that leads is this dangerous pivot point where it's where they were a few years ago. Wow, we won a championship with LeBron and AD and this really great, really well-calibrated supporting cast, but wouldn't it be great to have a third star, especially a guy who can take some of the pressure off?
Right. Hold that thought, because that's where we want to go next, is this idea of what now? Because there is definitely a gap, as you point out, Howard, and if it's not between the Lakers and the Nuggets, it's maybe the Lakers and a couple Eastern Conference teams, a rebuilt Suns teams, whatever it might be. And they have a couple paths to get there, whether you're talking about the players that are currently on the roster or some that aren't. And so let's get to that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by FanDuel, and make a fast break to FanDuel during the NBA playoffs, because right now new customers can get a no sweat first bet up to $2,500, $2,500 back in bonus bets. If your first bet doesn't win, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Safe, secure, super easy to use, and you can bet on everything from the money line to the top point scorers, or get a little saucy with an exclusive bet like the 2x3, 2 3-pointers scored in the first 3 minutes. Bad bet for Boston in game 7, or frankly, a lot of their series that they lost to Miami. Boom! At least the Celtics didn't get to the finals. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with same game parlay. Safe and secure app. Get paid instantly. There is no better place to bet all playoff action than America's number one sportsbook. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA.
Okay. What makes more sense? Whether it's Kyrie, whether it's something else, some other, like, are the Lakers a superstar away, do you think? Or are they just, like you said, you know, before, you know, run it back with something, a well-constructed supporting cast,
right,
and rely on your two superstars?
So, listen, I think there is a case to be made, and it's not an airtight case, but there's a case to be made that take this team as it stands, bring everybody back, start training camp with it. And D'Angelo Russell is a big part of this, I know. So I'll just hit on that particular topic with a glass half full take real quick here. D'Angelo Russell, a one-time All-Star during his stint here in my backyard in Brooklyn. And at his best, you could see, like, D'Angelo Russell has got a certain swagger to him and an extreme amount of confidence, sometimes irrational confidence, but a big shot maker, a lot of clutch shots during that particular season, and some others along the way, right? So D'Angelo Russell has some of that big game capability. He is a scorer and playmaker at a reasonably high level at his best. Where he fails sometimes is decision making, inconsistency in his playmaking, defense. But those are things where if he were somewhere else, you'd go, you know what? Flawed player. But if you put him alongside a couple of real stars and he was more of just your third best player. So that's how I look at him. I look at him as like this. If there's an ideal scenario for a D'Angelo Russell at this stage of his career, it's probably this one. Whether that's actually good enough to propel the Lakers or help propel the Lakers to another title run, I don't know. But I again, glass half full, D'Angelo Russell having kind of gotten acclimated, it's hard to play off LeBron, especially if you are a primary ball handler, playmaker type. If you're the guy who's been had the offense in your hands for your entire career, and suddenly you're playing next to LeBron James, it's hard. So you got to figure that out. Like, it wasn't even that easy for Kyrie Irving, who won a title with him, went to 3 straight finals with him, and ultimately decided, I want to go somewhere else because there's stuff that comes with it. So optimist view, D'Angelo Russell with a full season with the Lakers, starting in training camp, and now understanding kind of his place in the LeBroniverse, I guess. I think there's an upside there. Now, is he the ideal third star that you want in this scenario of, well, we know LeBron's going to miss a bunch of games because he's at that age where you miss a lot of games, and he has every year in LA. There are going to be nights where LeBron, you just can't, like, that game 4 against the Nuggets was incredible in so many ways, but also, like, it was almost all in the first half. Like, you just can't ride LeBron the same way you did when he was, you know, 28. Is D'Angelo Russell the guy that you could just say, you know what, there are going to be nights where LeBron needs to just, like, be facilitator and kick back and somebody else do the heavy lifting? Is D'Angelo Russell that guy? Probably not. Russell Westbrook wasn't that guy either. Is Kyrie Irving that guy? Kyrie Irving can be in the abstract, but it's the obvious things, right? One, there's a lot of stuff that comes with Kyrie. And again, somebody who I saw at close range here in my backyard in Brooklyn, doing things to guarantee that a Kevin Durant team for 2 straight seasons that should have been a contender was instead blown to smithereens. Like, you cannot overlook that. You can't overlook all the havoc he's wreaked in, you know, Cleveland, Boston, Brooklyn now. Dallas isn't his fault. The trade is the problem. Kyrie wasn't the problem, but still, you're banking a lot on Kyrie Irving if you decide to do that. Plus, there's the contract demands. Plus, there's the fact that, as you guys have already alluded to, you're probably now losing Rui Hachimura. You might be losing Jared Vanderbilt. You might be losing others. Having seen the Lakers go down this path a couple of years ago with the Westbrook thing, where you traded all the depth for one more star on the premise that LeBron needs somebody else to lean on, and having seen where that went, are you really then going to like repeat this again? And you're going to go all in on Kyrie at the cost of depth.
And beyond the dramatic backstory that Howard talked about everything that comes with Kyrie, one of the things that he didn't even list is the injury issues that Kyrie has dealt with a lot himself. So, I mean, sure. Kyrie is an option that also has a lot of potential pitfalls. What I think, though, is interesting, Howard, with what you were talking about with D'Angelo Russell and the idealness or lack thereof of D'Lo being your third star, I think a lot of this actually has to do with how far do you think Austin Reeves can continue progressing? Because there is a world where D'Angelo Russell is the bigger name and more well-known to the casuals, but that Austin Reeves might actually be the third option on this team, in which case D'Angelo Russell starts becoming 4 or 5, depending on, you know, Rui Hachimura's play at any given moment. And then it really starts turning into, A, is Austin Reeves progressing a good enough third option? B, are you cool with perhaps, I guess, overpaying in certain eyes what might be your 4th or 5th option with the goal of maximizing LeBron James? And if it takes a little extra money, that's what you do.
Well, I mean, look, D'Angelo Russell, I don't think there's going to be a ton of teams clamoring to that. He's not getting a max deal anywhere.
Thank you for clarifying this, because this is something still a lot of fans we hear about saying D'Angelo Russell's looking for $30 million. And if he doesn't get that, he's going to walk. I'm like, then he's going to have to find a different job in like a different, I don't know, occupation.
Hedge fund manager?
Nobody's paying him $30 million in the NBA, period.
No. No, he's like the good news for the Lakers is I think the league already kind of knew who D'Angelo Russell was anyway, and has an idea of what his value is. And he's a really good player, but he's not a max player. And, you know, as bad as that conference finals was for him, it's probably helps the Lakers because it probably depresses his market value that much more. And if you look at the teams with max cap room or with tons of cap room. It's all the teams that are like in various stages of rebuilding and or they already have somebody at point guard. Like, these are not teams that are going to go all out to sign D'Angelo. Like, the Lakers have, I don't think, any fear, or should not have any fear of just like losing him to somebody outbidding them. They should be able to come to terms. They can, you know, they can say, look, here, you know, you extend him whatever reasonable offer, and I'm not going to put numbers on it because I don't know what that is right now, and I haven't looked at their cap sheets. But you make your pitch to him, and if he says it's not enough, you say, we understand. Go see what else is out there, and if, you know, maybe we'll come to an agreement after you've tested the market. And he'll go test the market, and he'll find that there's nothing that great out there probably. That's my guess. That's my guess. I have not surveyed the league on this.
I think they need each other ultimately.
Yes. Yes, just like Kyrie and Dallas need each other. They went all in on him, and like that's why, again, why Kyrie's not going to end up with the Lakers, because the Mavericks can't afford to lose him. And the only way that the Mavericks are losing Kyrie Irving, I think, is if they use him in a sign-and-trade to get something else. And those are complicated because the player has to participate. The player has to want to go to the place you want to send him to. The place that you're sending him to has to, you know, be able to provide the right assets back to the Mavericks. Like, it's this stuff's hard. I think D'Angelo Russell and the Lakers do need each other, as you said. And I think that The one thing I'll quibble with on the D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves thing is, I think while Austin Reeves may be the better overall well-rounded player in some regard and a great third option, D'Angelo Russell's a third or fourth option who also can be the guy that you can just like lean on for a quarter or two or a couple of weeks maybe if you have to, if LeBron's out. I think D'Angelo Russell can do more at this stage in terms of just shot creation. Than Austin Reeves, perhaps. If you disagree, that, you know, tell me. But like I think D'Angelo Russell still has certain like physical tools that can. While I wouldn't want him to be, I wouldn't want to put too much on that. I wouldn't want to invest too much of my fate in him. He's got some tools that can help you out, especially when LeBron needs to ease back or is out.
Let's take a look at some of the names and some of the things like what the market is going to look like this summer, because, you know, there's the Lakers aren't going to be exactly the same team if they run it back. And if it's not Kyrie, there are still some other names and intriguing things that could be out there. Love to get Howard's early take on what kind of summer he thinks is going to be around the NBA. So we'll do that next. So we talked about it a little bit and giggled about it. Like, Lakers fans are fully in off-season Lakers mode, which means creating trades around like Malik Beasley that net the Lakers, if not all-stars, near all-stars. But I mean, the market out there, like, you see the early names, it's not as big, to me at least, as other summers. It's a low profile free agency summer. You see names like Buddy Hield, always available in Indiana. I could see them wanting to move off of him given his role on that team. You know, Fred VanVleet is an option out there. Gary Trent, nobody's quite sure what they're going to be doing in Toronto anyway.
Yeah.
And if it's not Kyrie, what names do you think around the league are going to be available, whether through sign and trades, whether dangled by their teams or whatever?
I mean, there's a lot of potentially intriguing names available, but I just don't know how the Lakers get to them. Like, look, in the abstract, I love the idea of Fred VanVleet with the Lakers. I love Fred VanVleet in a lot of places, but Fred VanVleet's going to command a pretty decent salary, I think, and I don't see a Laker path to him.
Even the clutch factor?
No. That doesn't matter.
If anything, I think that decreases the likelihood of a payment.
No, I just think that agency, like, we people overestimate the importance of agencies. Like, they can help you get a guy at times. There's some favor trading and quid pro quo that goes on for sure. It doesn't hurt, but ultimately a player is going to go where they can either make the most money and or get the biggest role and or win. You know what I mean? Like, it's all these other things. Like, you don't get somebody just because you're best player has the same agency as,
unless it's the Lakers mid-level, in which case they always get the clutch guy. Like, that's actually a fact, Howard.
Well, it's funny because in the years that we've all been obsessing over these things, whether it's with CAA or clutch or whoever, often when a roster is overloaded with a particular agency and we start joking about that agency being the de facto GM, It's usually not like the great play. It's a bunch of, it's like the 10th, 11th and 12th guy. Mm-hmm. It's not your yeah. third play. Like, you know what I mean? And yeah, like clutch has something to do with Anthony Davis getting to the Lakers, but like Anthony Davis could have been represented by us.
I'm pretty sure the Lakers came up with on their own. AD's pretty good. If we could get him, why not?
Right. Right. You know, I mean, and he was always going to demand to go where he wanted to go. And he wanted to play with LeBron. Like, you know, we put too much on this stuff. So here's what I'm curious about. Like, if the Lakers are willing to, here we go back to mortgaging the future for the present thing, but they've got the 17th pick. That's a decent pick. What could they do with the 17th pick plus a contract in a trade? Not sure.
Well, they have two non-guaranteed contracts in Beasley and Mo Bamba.
Yeah.
Like, I don't count.
I think Beasley, I'd read somewhere Beasley might have some sort of kicker that changes the guarantee on that if he's traded. I'm not sure,
you could also make the pick, wait until July, and then figure out how to package that with, and then you've got other options because now you're in free agency. But is that in play? Who could you get for that? I don't know. Like, I was scanning the standings before we got on, and I'm like, you know, who's in a position where the 17th pick, obviously not somebody who's going to help you win right away. So you're probably a rebuilding team, or maybe you're an older team that just needs some youth infusion. Also, do you have somebody to move? It gets really complicated, right? When you start trying to figure this out, there's the big names, but you just rule out all the big names. Like, the Lakers are not getting, I don't think they're going for Kyrie Irving, and I don't think they're getting Trae Young and, Karl Anthony Towns, Joel Embiid, all the guys that we're speculating on who, well, if this things go this way, maybe this is the next star to be moved. The Lakers aren't in a position to do those things, I don't think. So we're talking about second tier guys, probably.
Yeah. And I think, like, Hield to me is
a
fascinating option.
And they need shooting badly.
Right. And that was because, like, if you look, and I would bring back Malik Beasley just because I think you could probably do that. I think you could safely decline the option on Beasley and come back at a lower number. I think, you know, he's another guy whose end of season hurt him to the point where I don't think somebody else is going to pay him more than $16 million. Like, that doesn't seem likely. No. So, you know, you could bring him back for, you know, 2 and 25 with a second year player option or something like that. And I think, you know, particularly at that salary, you're getting a good player who has a track record of volume shooting. It's not like he came here and performed very poorly, but it's not like he's always been a poor performer. But if you could turn that role, high volume shooter, into Buddy Hield, who is a better version of that, that to me is the kind of upgrade I think the Lakers ought to be looking for, where in the context of your supporting cast, you're creating, because I think what you said in the last segment, Howard, was really smart. It's like, you need guys like Russell, like Reeves and whatever, who, you know, you can call them your third star if you want to, but that's not really what they are. They're really high level role players, depth guys, you know, not quite all stars, but, you know, better than average. And, you know, do you have enough of those guys who can carry you? So if LeBron misses the first month of the season after foot surgery, or they're treating him very carefully, you know, an Anthony Davis with Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, Buddy Hield, Rui Hachimura, like, that is that's a very credible rotation. Jared Vanderbilt, that will get you through, you know, 6-8 weeks or something like that without the ship sinking. Like, I think that's a credible rotation. I would love to see them go in that direction and try to upgrade the type of role player that they have.
And people should recognize where the NBA is right now, and especially with this new CBA kicking in, where having three max guys it's not impossible, but it's very, very limiting on a bunch of different levels. It's really hard to do, and it's intentionally that way. They're trying to disincentivize stacking up a bunch of supreme players on one team because the NBA wants talent to be more evenly distributed across the league, and that's what we've seen. So in an era of parity, which is what we're seeing right now, if you've got your two stars, then it's just about getting the most out of your two stars, your two max guys, and calibrating the best possible supporting cast around them. The Nuggets don't even have a certified second star. Jamal Murray plays that role sometimes, but Jamal Murray hasn't made the All-Star team yet. He's not all NBA. But Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon, Kadarius Caldwell-Pope, your old friend,
you know, Michael Porter. It's like, that's Michael just Porter, that Andy and I talked about that. There's outside of LeBron and AD, there's nobody on the Lakers who started for the Lakers who you would say would definitely start in place of a Nugget, and maybe Austin Reeves for KCP, but that's it.
Yeah, and so that's the thing. The goal now, if you've already got your two stars, and the Lakers do, granted, one of them is very, very advanced in his career. I was going to say old. I don't want to say old. But LeBron's up there. It does create a different kind of concern and pressure, but it doesn't change the reality, which is you win in the spring by having, at preferably two supremely talented players, and they do, and a really good supporting cast. And that's today's NBA. That was how the Bucks won the championship. It's how last year's Warriors won the championship. They didn't have multiple stars anymore. It's not the same Clay or the same Draymond anymore. It was Steph and a really good cast. And it was Kawhi and a really good cast when the Raptors won. This is the era we're in. So the Lakers are already, by definition, right in the mix because they've got their two all-NBA players. And they didn't make all-NBA this season. Or did LeBron end up making third team?
I think he did make.
Anthony Davis could have been on Defensive Player of the Year ballots and all this other stuff had he played more games. So the talent level is there. They have to stay healthy. You have to get them through the season. And yes, if Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell as a 1-2 punch of playmaking and some scoring can get you through a week or two here or there without LeBron, get some big man depth to take a little bit off of Anthony Davis a little bit, somebody else to bang with Jokic occasionally when they meet up again. It's smaller things. I don't think it's dramatic things. And I don't think the dramatic things are even in play because the system is so limiting now.
Last question for you, Howard. We just heard you talk about LeBron James in these horribly ageist ways. with that in mind...
Thank God he's not fat.
Right.
What you'd say then.
How ready do you think Anthony Davis is to truly take the mantle of like an undisputed number one offensive option, like take the torch from LeBron, like whatever? Because as much as sometimes I think people do focus or denigrate his offense too much, I mean, he averaged 26 points per game in the regular season, like 22 or 23 in the playoffs. That's not nothing. The reality is, Anthony Davis's lulls matter most specifically because he's playing with LeBron.
Yeah.
And LeBron specifically needs that help at this stage of his career. If AD was attached to just about any other star in the league, you would be saying it's unfair. But with LeBron, it's a very specific, practical matter.
There's a difference between being a phenomenal 1B to a 1A, which is what Anthony Davis is, versus having to just be the 1A and to be night in, night out. And I think we have enough of a sample size now of Anthony Davis in New Orleans and Anthony Davis with the Lakers to suggest that he's a great player. I was one of the voters for the 75th anniversary team. I know that he was a controversial choice, but he was on my ballot for that. I think Anthony Davis is an incredible player. And I think that the Lakers, if they're going to win another championship, it'll be because of everything that he brings to the table next to LeBron. But asking for this baton passing where Anthony Davis now takes the load 80% of the time so LeBron can sit back and be playmaker and not be overly taxed in the regular season or in the playoffs, I just don't know if it's realistic. I think give me the counter argument if you've got it, but I don't know if there's an argument to be made anymore at this stage of Anthony Davis's career to say that we should still be expecting him to be that kind of not just lead scorer, but like the alpha, the guy who says, guys, I got this, put it on me. Also by position, it's a little bit harder, right? Mm-hmm. He's not Jokic. And even, Embiid is the MVP right now. And there are limits for what Embiid could do by position based on skill set and not being the primary playmaker of your team, not being the guy who can just go create a shot out of thin air anywhere from any zone on the court.
Well, I think that is one more reason why you would look at something like Buddy Hield or a Buddy Hield like player. Now you've added, if that were the case, you'd have three guys on your rotation who are 15 to 20 point scorers and Russell Reeves and somebody like Hield to go.
Maybe Hachimura as well.
Maybe Hachimura, if you think he's a 15 point night, find that scoring in other places. That is all the time we have. Howard gets very upset if you run past the much more even than David Locke about this whole half hour show thing. Howard is like, has been sending us angry texts throughout this recording going, you guys are over. You're over.
Don't blame him, folks.
But this is fun and we should keep doing it. And we hope we continue to have access to you for as long as possible here on the network. Listen, it's fantastic.
Keep saying all the contractually obligated things that make me sound like a wonderful person and journalist and all that other stuff, and use all the verbiage that has been provided in the contract writers.
read the read. Don't ad lib. The great and wise and benevolent Howard Beck joins us. Thank you so much. We always enjoy it. We appreciate it.
Thanks, fellas. Always a pleasure.